Hi, I'm Dr. Caroline Leaf, and welcome to my podcast. Each week, I focus on topics related to mental health and discuss ways to help you deal with issues like anxiety, depression, shame, guilt, PTSD, and more. I've spent the last 30 years researching the mind-brain connection and mental health. I worked with patients who suffered from traumatic brain injuries, struggled with anxiety, battled with learning issues, and often worked with families to resolve major relationship and communication problems. In this podcast, you will hear the advice I gave to my patients and the techniques I developed and used to help them find healing. My goal is to give you simple, effective, and practical tips and tools to help you take back control over your mental, emotional, and physical health. Before I begin today's discussion, I want to take a moment to thank everyone who has supported this podcast either by leaving a review, spreading the word, sharing episodes with friends and family, and posting about this podcast on social media. I love reading your reviews and learning how I can make this podcast even more helpful. Now back to today's podcast. In today's podcast, we're going to discuss the do's and the don'ts of brain health and why it's important and what we can do about it. If the brain isn't physically healthy, this is going to set up a negative feedback loop between the brain and the mind. Remember, the mind and the brain are separate, and the mind works through the brain and the brain responds to the mind. This does mean that we need to focus on both the mind and the brain, mind and brain health. So, in the studio with me today, I have a very special guest, a neurosurgeon who's not only done 10 years of brain surgery, but who also has done a lot of research. Dr. Darlene Mayo is a board-certified neurosurgeon and a neuroscientist. She received her undergraduate degree from Duke. She completed her medical training at the Medical College of Georgia. She's fellowship trained in neurosurgery at Emory. She completed two biomedical engineering fellowships at Clinitech in France and at Mayo Clinic, and she has performed surgery for 10 years, most recently at Cleveland Clinic. She's been studying chemicals and electrical activity in the brain for over 18 years and has conducted a number of scientific research studies. She's also, I'm very happy to say, on my advisory board of my clinical trials and part of my integrated mind network of highly skilled professionals and doctors. Welcome, Darlene. I'm so excited to have you on the show to discuss this extremely important topic.
Dr. Leaf, thank you so much for having me. It is an absolute pleasure to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here. Do you mind? I have given a brief overview, but do you mind just telling the listeners a little bit more about yourself?
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, I was in practice as a neurosurgeon for about 10 years, where I focused on treating patients with Parkinson's disease and essential tremor, as well as chronic pain. And I did this through a variety of surgical procedures, where I would place brain stimulators in or spinal cord stimulators to help control these symptoms. What was interesting to me during that time is, despite the fact that we would improve some of the physical symptoms of these patients, we found that some of their other conditions, such as depression and anxiety, would not necessarily improve as much as we would have expected because of the way the brain chemistry works. So that has really led me to more of my current work and research, where I study brain chemistry and how we can help enhance the overall function of the brain.
Fantastic. That's so exciting. And that's how we connected, which I'm very excited about. Do you want to just talk about how we connected? Because you've known me longer than I've known you. And I'm so excited you're part of our team now.
I am so excited about that as well. Yes, I first picked up one of your books many, many years ago, went through your 21-day detox program and just found it fascinating. And then had the pleasure of meeting you at a conference in Dallas a few months ago at 100X conference, where you spoke, and really appreciated that introduction. And once I had the opportunity to find out what you were doing with your research and clinical trials, I was so excited, because this needs scientific proof. It is absolutely effective, everything that you are doing. We need the scientific evidence. So I was delighted to find out that you were conducting those trials and very honored to be part of that now.
Well, we're thrilled that you're part of it. And I couldn't think of a better person to talk about brain health and why it's so important than you. So let's start with that. Let's start with, why is brain health so important?
Well, I'm so glad you asked that. And here's what's interesting. When we think about brain health, here's what people don't realize. Brain health actually affects your relationship with your spouse. Your brain health actually affects how you perform at work. And your brain health affects the rest of your body and how likely you are to get other diseases or medical conditions. People do not understand this. I would see patients in my clinic all the time, and I now see clients for health coaching that come to me once there's a problem, but they do not realize how significant our brain health is on our mind, on our lives in general. So I wanted to share a little bit about the science behind all of that. All right. So you may say, how in the world can your brain health affect my relationship with my spouse? Well, as you know, there's a wonderful chemical in our brain called oxytocin. It's one of my favorite brain chemicals. It's a happiness neurochemical. It's related to trust and bonding. It's released between a mother and a baby. But here's the thing. Scientific research shows that in couples that are very bonded together, in couples that are in the falling in love stages, they have more oxytocin released in their brain, which is fantastic. If we are not supporting our brain properly, though, it does not produce oxytocin and it is not functioning properly. So in the same way with your success at work, for example, if your brain is not functioning as well as it could be. So let me just stop for a second and talk about how brain cells talk to each other. So there is this protein that's wrapped around some brain cells. It's called myelin, and it speeds up how fast the brain cells talk to each other. And when this myelin is there, the brain cells actually talk to each other at up to 300 miles per hour. I mean, that's faster than a sports car, right? But if we are not supporting our brain with proper nutrition, if we are exposed to a lot of toxins in the environment, that myelin can get stripped away or not formed properly. That slows down your thinking. So at work, you're slower and less efficient, all right? Additionally, as these brain chemicals, dopamine, serotonin, these other happiness neurochemicals, motivating neurochemicals, memory neurochemicals, if they are not made in a proper amount or they are not able to function properly, that can lead to depression. It can lead to anxiety. So it really is so important that we focus on brain health, how to protect the brain and how to build it up properly.
Excellent. That's brilliant answer. And you've opened a lot of good points there. And specifically the one about the relationships and bringing up the oxytocin. People don't always think that eating healthy for your brain or focusing on the gut-brain connection and the immune-brain connection can actually improve relationships. But it's so relevant, isn't it? Do you want to talk a little bit more about the gut-brain connection and the immune-brain connection, which are two fairly new areas that not everyone is very aware of? I've spoken about it quite a lot in my shows, but I would love you to dive into that, Darlene, because I think that's so relevant to everything you've just said.
Absolutely. So here's what's so interesting. When I went to medical school back in the 90s, there was no discussion of this because this research had not been done. So our brain has 100 billion neurons, okay? But what you may not know is that your gut has 500 million neurons, brain cells in your gut, in your gastrointestinal tract. So they are very intimately connected, which means that individuals who have diseases of the brain often have diseases of the gut and vice versa. Now, the great thing about some treatments are you can actually focus on some treatments for one that will actually improve the other organ system, which is fantastic. Also, your heart has 40,000 brain cells in it, which is amazing. I love that. And the immune system and the brain are also intimately connected. So, one thing that I really want to get across, and I know you focus on this as well, is this idea of a holistic approach to health. So many times today, people want a one-shot wonder, right? Mm-hmm. They want a pill or a specific one treatment or a trick or technique that they can do to improve their system. The brain, the body, is not designed that way. It's designed that when we support all of it together, that is where it functions the best. So if your brain is healthy, if your gut is healthy, and you come in contact with a virus in the environment, you're much less likely to get sick. Or if you do, it's going to be much milder and shorter lived, for example.
Excellent. That's absolutely brilliant. And I'm so pleased that you've raised that, because it is so important that we as humanity recognize the importance of this holistic approach. So when we talk about gut brain and immune brain connection, can you give us some tips how do you see a holistic lifestyle that embraces this gut brain immune brain connection, activating all the correct chemicals so that we function better in work, relationships, etc.?
Right. So absolutely. So I have some specific tips that are very helpful. So from a nutritional standpoint, there's a couple of things. One is the idea of detoxification, and that would be detoxification both of your body and of your mind, which is very, very important. So supporting the body through a natural herbal cleanse is very important, as well as with water to help flush out all the toxins that are in our environment, in our food. Here's the thing though. So stress in our environment causes toxins in our brain. And it is so important to detoxify the mind as well. Through sleep, your brain has its natural detoxification, which I love. Mm-hmm. I call the brain a street sweeper in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. Just like in a busy city, you have street sweepers that come by and clean off all of the trash from the street. Your brain, while you sleep at night, if you sleep the prescribed 7 to 8 hours a night, will actually help clear those out. Mm-hmm. But also through your program, and that's why I love your 21-day detox program. This is so important to help break down those pathways that form in the brain that are toxic thoughts. So those are certainly very important and will help support the gut, the immune system, and the brain as well. Additionally, is building up all of those systems with healthy nutrition. So we look at the typical American diet, I'll use it as an example here, right? It's processed foods and fried foods, and it's not healthy nutrition. So Americans in particular are lacking in a lot of B vitamins, D vitamins, and omega-3s, which are critical to not only brain health, but also to gut health and immune system health. So adding those into your diet, and I want to make a note about B vitamins in particular, because there's about a third of people that cannot process B vitamins as the rest of the world does. And they're missing an enzyme that helps to perform a function called methylation. So they actually have to get methylated forms of B vitamins in order for them to be effective. And I think this is one of the reasons why we see a lot of these diseases with depression and chronic fatigue syndrome, because individuals are lacking in these vitamins in particular.
I can't agree with you more, Darlene. Everything you said is so vitally important. And I'm so glad you've emphasized this, because I've done so many podcasts dealing with each of the concepts that you brought up in separate podcasts, and I've got books about this. I'm sure you've seen my book, Think and Eat Yourself Smart, and I know you've written books, and I'm so pleased that they're hearing this from you as well, because you've seen this with your patients, you're seeing this out there with the people that you're working with, that this modern American diet, the mad diet, is just wrecking our body. And that B vitamin, I want to just jump in on what you said about the B vitamins and methylation. That's if we take that a little bit further back to the mind, the impact of methylation on basically the genetic switching and on and off the whole epigenetic factor, and how our thinking thinking also influences the B vitamins and influences genetic switches. Can you talk a little bit to that side of why vitamins are not just going to make your brain healthy, but the link back to vitamins and the brain and the mind?
Yeah, so I'm so glad you asked that question, because here's the thing. As these vitamins and omegas, so the omegas help to build the myelin sheath that I was mentioning to you that speeds up the brain processing. These vitamins actually affect the amount and processing of the brain chemicals that I was talking to you about, dopamine and serotonin, right? So the important thing here is your level of depression or anxiety can be increased significantly if you do not have these vitamins in the right amounts. Okay. Additionally, as we are, the way the mind works is the brain will form connections, right? It forms neural pathways, and this is done by repeating activities over and over again. It works much more efficiently when you have supported it with the right brain chemicals. So that is why these vitamins are so critical to brain function as well as mind function.
Okay, that's fantastic. So it's a bit like if we don't look after our car, you can't expect it to keep running. If you don't look after your computer, if you don't look after, it's the same concept involved, that we can't just feed our body endless amounts of bad food and not sleep and just think we can ignore the anxiety and ignore the toxic thoughts and just be exposed to chemicals and then just think, oh, well, why am I depressed? You know, I think that's a big issue in today's age, isn't it, Darlene? That people are feeling anxious or feeling depressed and they immediately want to, well, let me go and get the diagnosis. Let me get the mental illness diagnosis and get the medication, the quick fix, instead of standing back and taking a complete lifestyle approach.
No, it's absolutely true. And I love the analogy with the car that you brought up. If you don't put gas in your car, it's not going to run. If you do not change your oil out regularly, it is not going to run very well. And at some point, your engine is going to shut down. The brain and the mind work very similarly. And along those lines, you also brought up a computer analogy, which I love, because there is something so common these days in people's lifestyle, and that is this concept of multitasking, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the brain is not designed for multitasking. Mm-hmm. It works highly efficiently when it is focused on a single task. And I want to compare to a computer, right? If you have 100 windows open on your computer, it's going to run slowly, correct? Mm-hmm. So in the same way, your brain does not function as well if you are bouncing from one task to the next. If, however, you focus on a single task, it is very powerful. It actually recruits activity from all over your brain. We know this from MRI, special X-ray studies of the brain that show us activity, and it invokes your memory of something maybe you learned 10 years ago when you're focusing on a task, if you're able to really concentrate on that. There was a study done out of New York University a few years ago on Buddhist monks, and they did MRI scans of their brain, and they were able to see that as they were singularly focused, because these monks, they spend hours daily focusing on single tasks, mindfulness, and meditation, and they were able to see how efficiently their brains worked. What's fascinating about this study too is they had no depression, they had no anxiety, they had no addictive behaviors, and no pain. So this connection, we are starting to see more and more research these days about the importance of our lifestyle and how it impacts our brain, our overall health. And I would say another tip that I would give everyone, if you do not spend time meditating or mindfulness, even for 5 to 10 minutes a day, add that to your routine, because it is incredibly helpful for your brain.
Ladies, I need to tell you about a bra company that has changed my life. Third Love. With Third Love, I took a really quick and fun online quiz, which then matched me to the perfect bra, shape, and size. Third Love also offers more than 70 sizes, including half cup sizes. Every customer has 60 days to wear it, wash it, and put it to the test. If you don't love it, you can return or exchange it for free, and Third Love will donate it to a woman in need. Right now, they are offering my listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/Dr. Leaf. That's thirdlove.com/Dr. Leaf for 15% off today. Oh, absolutely. I can't agree with you more. You know, you and I are speaking the same language, preaching to the choir here. So it's very exciting to for people to just see that this is not just that this is, you're a neurosurgeon. I mean, you've worked for years on the actual human brain, and you are telling us and you are confirming what I'm in the mind. My area of expertise has been mind for 30 years now, and we come from two different worlds, but two similar worlds. You coming from the more physical world of the brain and me coming from the more non-physical world of the mind, yet both of us are saying the same thing. And that is why I felt it's so important to have you on the show. And I'm so thrilled that you're part of our team, because you are confirming what the research is also showing that I teach a lot about. And I know you and I've discussed this before, about the fact that people are dying younger from preventable lifestyle diseases. And everything, all the tips that you've just given are telling people that you can't just go and get brain surgery. You can't just go and get a tablet. You actually have to change your entire lifestyle. And that brings me to my next question, which is, what do you think the reason is for brain health? The focus on a holistic approach to brain mind health being more important today?
Right. Well, what we've seen over the past few years, as you just mentioned, an increase in the incidence, so the number of people with different diseases, and particularly neurological diseases. And we're even beginning to see diseases in children that we never saw in children before, or very rarely. And I'll give you a couple of examples. So today, it is more likely, if you have a baby boy today that is born, that he will have autism than he will have green eyes. That is incredible. It is a risk of 1 in 33.
Wow.
Okay. There is a 5% chance that your child will have essential tremors. Let me tell you how much this has changed. I now work with a number of parents that are coming to me telling me that their children have tremors. And in going and trying to conduct research, because I did not even learn about this in my fellowship because it was so rare. And this is, you know, 15 years ago that I was training. The literature is sparse. It is so sparse because it was such a rare disease, even 10, 15 years ago. So we are seeing, and I believe that it has to do not only with the toxic lifestyle that we have discussed, but also the environmental toxins that are in the atmosphere, that are in our soils from the pesticides. Even if you eat organic food, you still can consume these, and from the self-induced toxins, right? That from the processed foods, from the stress that we live under. This is very much related, I believe, to this increased incidence of diseases and diseases at an earlier age. Additionally, I believe that as a society, we focus too much on a medicine or a single treatment that can lead to an improvement in these symptoms. And I'll give you an example. So as I was practicing in clinic, I would have patients with tremors come to me and say, okay, so I've heard there are two medicines and one surgery to treat this tremor. And I would say to them, you know, those are possible treatments. They are not for everybody, and they are variably effective. Some people, they help a great deal. Some people, they do not help at all. But there are over 50 treatments for tremors that people do not know about, because most of them are natural, holistic, and focused on this overall lifestyle change. So I wrote a book on the topic.
Wow, that's amazing. Absolutely. And we'll put that in the show notes for sure. We'll put both your books in there, because I know you've written two books. We'll put that in the show notes. But that is those statistics are crazy. Just say them again about the incidence of the autism. And
yes, so there is a 1 in 33, a 1 in 33 chance that your child will have autism. So for a male to be born today, he's more likely to have autism than he is to have green eyes, which is ridiculous.
Okay, so now how has that changed in the last 30 years? So 30, even 15 years ago, do you know what the percentage change has been?
Right. So it has increased, I believe, tenfold.
Tenfold. Okay. We've seen that across the board, because what about things like the dementias? Alzheimer's 30 years ago when I was training, 30 between Alzheimer's we would see between ages 65 to 85. And now we're seeing it as young. And even it was mainly more leaning towards the 80s, 70s and 80s. Now we're seeing people as young as 25 and 35 with early onset dementia, and early onset Alzheimer's.
We do. We're starting to see this concept. It's called a bimodal peak. So instead of just seeing this in the elderly, we also see a peak of a number of diseases, like you mentioned, with Alzheimer's, even Parkinson's disease. There is now a classification for early onset Parkinson's disease. And we did not see this, you know, 20 years ago or so.
That's something that I wanted to also bring up. I'm so glad you brought that up about the Parkinson's, because I know that's an area that you've done a lot of work in. And that's interesting, because it's one of those confusing diseases that people don't quite know what to do, but it's on the rise. And from what I've, if I'm understanding correctly, what this change is, it's related to lifestyle. It's related to, there's a lot of work around how psychotropic drugs can also create this disease in people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we are seeing more and more studies, you know, Parkinson's is one of the conditions that it can have a genetic component. So it can be passed down through families, but it's not so common for that. What we are seeing many more incidences related to environmental toxins. And even I've seen a number of veterans who have come back with Parkinson's disease. So this is really a significant problem. What's interesting to me is some of the research that I've done and a couple of studies that I just wanted to bring up that I've done on Parkinson's. So Parkinson's is a disease of not having enough of dopamine in your brain. So this is a chemical. This is one of your happiness neurochemicals that I mentioned, but it also helps with movement, which is why individuals with Parkinson's either get very stiff or they have tremor or they're very slow moving. Okay. So you would think then that an individual with Parkinson's, that you are able to increase the amount of dopamine in their brain if they were suffering from depression, which is common with low dopamine too. And let me tell you, 70% of people with Parkinson's have depression. That is a huge number. Okay. Mm-hmm. So these are definitely related. But we did a study where we looked at, as people's tremor scores improved, so their symptoms got better after we did surgery on them, we looked to see whether their depression improved or not. We assumed that it would. Here's what was fascinating with that particular study. We found that even if their scores that I said their tremor improved got better, if the patient did not think that they improved, then their depression would not improve. So this really speaks to the fact that there is more going on here than just the brain chemistry that we are aware of. Another study that, and I haven't shared this with you before, but this was a really wonderful study that we did. So I am a musician. I'm a classically trained pianist, and I love studying music. And so we wanted to study the impact of music on the brain of Parkinson's patients. And here's what we did, because I have always, we do brain stimulation surgery with patients awake, believe it or not. So I've always played music in the operating room. And I've noticed that when we play music that the patients liked, they tended to do better. And I said, okay, we've got to study this, right? So we set up this clinical trial where we actually recorded from the cells in the brain while we were playing music. And then we had a control group where we were playing no music, just white noise. And what we found was amazing. The brain cells started talking to each other differently and the way they were supposed to when the patients were listening to a particular type of music that had a melody to it. So it actually mimicked the effect of deep brain stimulation. It was absolutely fascinating, which is why another thing that I always tell my patients, my clients, is listen to music, because it is very healing. There, you know, there's a number of studies on this, but it actually, I have seen with my own eyes, it changed the way the brain cells talk to each other.
That is fascinating. So you, what you were saying, you had the same effect from playing music in surgery as deep brain stimulation.
Yes.
That's phenomenal. The one is rather less invasive than the other. I mean, that's very powerful. One of our team as you know, Dr. Robert Turner, he's a neurologist and he does work with music in the brain as well, research on that. And he's actually said similar things, you know, and this is very relevant that a neurosurgeon and a neurologist, you are saying, basically saying with things like Parkinson's that we've that has always been seen as one of those scary diseases that can only be treated, you know, like in the category of cancers and Alzheimer's, where it's seen as it's a totally medical issue and it needs a medical solution. Like you always have, like you said earlier on, where patients came into the clinic and they'd say to you, okay, if I need two medications and one surgery and I'm fixed, kind of telling you what to do, looking for that physical thing. And what you're telling me is that your research actually showed that a non-physical and almost a spiritual thing. I mean, music is a non-physical type of stimulation, is making a change in the way that the brain was responding. And that confirms the mind-brain research, basically the influence of mind in response to music and how that changed the structure, the neuroplasticity response inside the brain. Is that pretty much, if I've understood you correctly, that's what you're saying. That is absolutely outstanding. And then you mentioned about the veterans and Parkinson's. And I just want to touch on that because it's such an issue with veterans and it's just the management of veterans. It's just, as we all know, it's such a problem and that's another topic entirely. But I just wanted to touch on the link between veterans and Parkinson's and the increase in veterans suffering from Parkinson's. Do you think that there's some relationship between the fact that veterans are labeled as having an illness of PTSD when PTSD is not actually an illness, it's a response, and that they medicated with drugs that do change the electrical nature of the brain, and that there could be a relationship between the increase in Parkinson's with the way that they're managing mind by just saying, okay, it's an illness, here's a drug, as opposed to allowing them to process what they've gone through and talk about it and listen to music and all that different kind of stuff. What's your view?
So I see a lot of veterans and they'll come to me and they'll say, you know, do you think it was Agent Orange or do you think it was this chemical that I was exposed to or that? And there's some research, but there's really very spotty research to support anything like that. But I think you are absolutely right. When you look at the processing of what veterans go through, you know, when they are in war, right? And then they come back home and they have no time to actually detoxify their mind from all of the horrors that they've seen and things that they've had to do, right? Something is going on in their brain, right? They are storing mm-hmm. up those memories and that anger and that pain, and it is not being released properly. Mm-hmm. Instead, as you said, they are given medications that are just altering brain chemistry without actually relieving what is causing the source of that problem. It's like putting a Band-Aid on a broken arm.
Absolutely.
It's not going to fix the problem. So I believe, number one, we need to spend a great deal more attention to developing programs for our veterans as they come back from war so that they go through this psychological detoxification, I would say. And then if there are underlying conditions beyond that, then addressing those at that time. But first, let's deal with what we know is the problem and seeing if some of these other physical symptoms don't resolve, which I believe they would.
Brilliant. Excellent. And that's the direction that that's the direction that we're actually going to be doing a clinical trial in the future with veterans, dealing with the psychological first, as opposed to the current way that they are just going straight to the physical. So would you agree, Darlene, that we're living in a world where we're trying to be ignoring the spiritual side of humanity? This is kind of how I explained it. And I know you've heard me and I know my listeners have heard me explain it, but I'd love your view. The way I see this is that we're so focused on the physical, we're not looking at enough at the spiritual, which is pretty much 99% of who we are, and the spiritual being the non-physical. So someone who's a veteran who's been exposed to these toxic, terribly toxic situations, that's this very non-physical thing that they've experienced and physical, but you've got to deal with the 99% before we deal with the 1% or parallel them. But the current model is just to look at the 1%. Just let's make everything about the physical, medicalize the misery. And I think that's contributing to in large. And then in addition, you talked about just putting on a Band-Aid. That Band-Aid that they're putting on of just giving medications, those medications, a lot of them do cause the sides, the tremor effects that we see in Parkinson's as well. So these two things I've thrown out. Can you comment on both of those?
Yes, absolutely. So I love that you brought up the fact that we don't attend to the spiritual. You know, I think that because we see physical changes, right? It's right in front of our eyes. It's a sense that we're all very familiar with, that we attend to it. But every day. And I advise, I do this routine every day. And I know you do something similar, to focus on not only physical, but mental, spiritual, and relational. And when people do not focus on those individually, other things break down. I have a lot of people come to me and they'll have a variety of physical ailments. They may have depression, anxiety as well. And I ask them, what is going on spiritually with you? And they will give me a blank stare or say, I don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, if you have not given attention to your spiritual side, guess what? When there's an outside, influence like a virus or something else or a trauma going on, your physical body, your mind is not strong enough to support that. You have to attend to your spiritual side every day and focus on that as much as you would give yourself a meal 3 times a day. It is absolutely as important. You have to build up your mind every day through reading, through creativity, through learning, through teaching. If you do not do this, then it's, the mind, the body, and the spirit, they are all designed to work together and support each other. But if you ignore one of them, the others are eventually going to break down. They are not going to be able to sustain it.
Excellent. I totally agree. I love how you've answered that. And I love the fact that you just for the listeners, just to help them understand, when I talk about the spiritual, generally in science, we're talking about the non-physical, and we see beings as being physical and non-physical, and the physical being the brain, physical brain and the body, and then the non-physical being our ability to think and feel and choose and connect with the deep meaning of life and all that kind of stuff. And that is the biggest part of us, this thinking, feeling, choosing, connecting with who I am and why I'm here and how I progress through life, etc., is something that's not being addressed currently in the medical, in terms of helping people deal with stuff like people coming back from war and so on. Darlene, can you also comment on the Parkinson symptoms related to psychotropics? Are you comfortable talking about that? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of the medications that are antipsychotics, for example, that is a very common medication to give to a veteran or for a number of other conditions, even autism. We've seen this given very commonly. This antipsychotic drug actually lowers the dopamine levels in the brain significantly, which then, number one, that leads to Parkinson's, like we were just mm-hmm. talking about. That's the one of the main hallmarks of Parkinson's disease, but it also worsens depression and it worsens anxiety. And it's just forming this cycle that there's no way to get out of until something is stopped. But the really dangerous part about this, and I know you're very familiar with how these pathways are formed in the brain. When we do the same thing over and over again every day, you're essentially forming these highways in the brain, right? And if you do it for a long enough time, it's like a concrete highway, right? It's not mm-hmm. just a path. And you have to actively take a jackhammer to that and break that down before you can even hope to start building up these healthy pathways. So really, this idea of active detoxification of the mind and the brain, as well as building up through not only through nutrition, but through visualization and these other positive methods, right, is critical to deal with both sides of it.
I love it. I love it. I love the fact that you are confirming the message that we have to deal with not just the physical. We have to deal with the whole person. We have to deal with all these other aspects too. They've been brushed aside with the dominance of the physical focus, the biomedical model. There's been such a dominance on take a medication. That's the solution. That's the science. Meanwhile, it's more scientific to deal with the mind, or as scientific, I should say, to deal with the mind and the physical, because both need to work together in a feedback loop. So that's extremely important. And just one last thing about the medication with the tardive dyskinesia and the akathisia and that kind of stuff that they suffer, which is these, the tremor movements from those drugs. People are often told that that's a disease coming back, and there wasn't a disease in the first place, which goes to the second last question I have, is that I've noticed in my work and when I was practicing clinically, a tremendous move to this medicalization of misery, this move away from looking at if a person is feeling anxious or depressed or something, there's an underlying cause. And part of that is addressing diet, etc., and meditation, visualization, correct eating, sleeping, all those are a huge part of it. But the addressing the underlying cause of there's something going on and we have to focus on that holistic approach. Any comments around that?
Yeah, so I firmly believe we are right on the same page here that if you do not attend to the if you do not attend to the underlying problem, then it is going to continue to recur. And putting a Band-Aid on it through medications, through different isolated therapies without building up the mind and the brain together, you are not going to solve that problem.
Brilliant. Okay, brilliant. And then one last question I wanted to ask you, Darlene, and we haven't finished. We're definitely going to have to do a lot more podcasts together because we've just kind of skimmed the surface. So it's been fantastic. Thank you. But my last question to you is, there's a lot of work around the optimism bias of the brain, the fact that there's no structures in the brain for fear and anxiety, that we don't have proteins or nerve networks that are designed for toxicity, for irritation and frustration and dealing with what you see at war and all these toxic, terrible things that our brain gets very damaged when we as humans experience these toxic situations. As a neurosurgeon, what is your take on the optimism bias, the design of the brain, the fact that the brain is literally wired for love?
So it is my belief and understanding that our brain is designed to protect itself. Right. And you look at structures like the default mode network, your brain, anything that this is why we're so resistant to change, because your brain, anything that is unfamiliar to your mind, to your brain, it treats like your body will treat a virus and it will destroy it and try to remove it. Here's the thing, though, if it is continually bombarded with negativity and trauma and things like you see in war, or let's take a child growing up in a home where they're continually hearing negative things and negative messaging, the brain becomes very overwhelmed and it actually has difficulty processing that much negativity. It does not know how to deal with it, and that starts to break down its processing. It is not able to function the way it should. And I believe that is one of the reasons that we see so many of these mental illnesses coming out of these situations.
Brilliant answer. Absolutely fantastic. Well, Darlene, that's all we've got time for today. And I just want to thank you for your tremendous insight, for the excellent work that you've done. And I'm very thrilled that you're part of my team. And I'm excited to do research with you in the future. And thank you for joining us today. And I hope you'll join us again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. It has been my absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much. I hope you found today's podcast interesting and helpful. If you want more tips and help with managing anxiety, depression, and mental health, be sure to visit my website at drleaf.com. And to sign up for my weekly newsletter, where I also include a schedule of my speaking events and so much more. And follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Just look for Dr. Caroline Leaf. Also, I love seeing all your posts on social media about this podcast. I love seeing what resonates with you and what you've learned. So be sure to continue posting and tagging me and letting me know what you think and how these tips worked out for you. And don't forget, leave a review and keep spreading the word about this podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I really hope you learned something new and helpful. Till then, I'm Dr. Caroline Leaf.